Times, Kash Patel's FBI opening an investigation into James Comey. The Times reports that Comey launched an off-the-books honeypot operation against candidate Donald Trump. According to a whistleblower, he sent two female undercovers to infiltrate Trump's 2016 campaign and told them to act as honeypots, spies who use sex to get what they want. And the honeypots ingratiated themselves in the top ranks of the campaign. If true, that means the Obama administration was conducting multiple phony investigations into Trump without any evidence. The whistleblower says FBI employees were told to shut their mouth about the operation, and one of the agents was transferred to the CIA so she couldn't testify. This investigation into Comey isn't about revenge. It's about justice.
Well, thank you, Jesse Waters from Fox. He's been doing some great reporting, and he's reporting there on the latest story. Maybe not the latest, because every day we learn something new about the nation's Federal Bureau of Investigation. Well, Kash Patel is in there now, and so lots of things are stirring. So today we're going to have a part two discussion with FBI whistleblower Steve Friend. Steve is the author of True Blue, My Journey from Beat Cop to Suspended FBI Whistleblower. But before we get into the discussion with Steve Friend, as long as the abortion pill is legally mailed and taken in all 50 states, no state can be abortion-free. Abortion pills carry distinct risks to mothers and death to babies, and now accounts for over 60% of all abortions. Preborn's network of clinics shine a light into this darkness by offering free services to women considering the future of their baby, including the abortion reversal pill. This powerful remedy can help reverse the curse of this toxic medication. Preborn reaches into the heart of babies and mothers and with God's love and compassion. And to date, they have rescued over 300,000 babies. Your tax-deductible monthly support of any amount is crucial in the fight for life. All proceeds go toward life, and together we can reverse this horrible curse. Saving babies isn't just about one life. It's about saving the heartbeat of the entire nation. To donate, please go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, this is Sandy Rios 24/7. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. You can email us at sandy@afr.net. Love hearing what you have to say, and I share as many of your email as I can on the air. You can also call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can find us on social media platforms, and you can also go to sandyrios.com, listen to the show, and find out more about what we're doing. Well, before I talk to Steve for our second conversation with him today, I want to just remind you who he is, because we don't retell that story in part two. He had his dream job as an FBI special agent, and after nearly a decade of combating violent crime, human trafficking, and child predators, he was reassigned to the FBI's unprecedented investigation of the political unrest at the United States Capitol on January the 6th, 2021. Friend soon uncovered efforts by the FBI and Department of Justice to manipulate statistics and exaggerate the nationwide threat of domestic terrorism. Friend spotlighted how the politicized FBI was cooking the books to support an ongoing narrative from the Joe Biden administration to label Donald Trump voters as violent extremists. Friend witnessed overzealous practices to harass conservative Americans and realized the FBI was turning its investigative processes into a punishment. When the married father of two made his bombshell allegations and a whistleblower disclosure, leaders within the FBI exposed themselves as partisan, ambitious players who insisted that January 6 protesters killed police officers and attempted to seize American democracy. Hell-bent on suppressing Friend from exposing the truth, FBI officials seized his gun and badge and suspended him from working as a special agent. Well, that's the story, and that's the platform upon which we continue today's discussion with Steve Friend on Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something. We talked about the Southern District of New York. You mentioned it. And the Epstein story is big in the news because Pam Bondi had promised that the FBI was going to, well, she was demanding that the FBI turn over this the thousands of pages that they have on Epstein. Well, Jesse Waters had an interesting observation about that Southern District of New York office. So let me play this clip, and then, Steve, I want just what all of you think about what's going on with that. Here's Jesse Waters, clip 10. Adam?
So who's in charge at the New York FBI field office? Who's withholding Epstein docs from the attorney general? James Dennehy is running the show there. There he is. This is the guy who emailed his whole staff to dig in after Trump took office. And don't forget that James Comey's daughter is an assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. She worked on the Epstein and Maxwell cases. She's kind of knee-deep in this. Epstein was facing sex trafficking charges in Lower Manhattan. Where's all that paperwork? The FBI seized computers, surveillance videos, banking records, file cabinets, and photographs from all of Epstein's properties in New Mexico, the Virgin Islands, Palm Beach, and in New York.
All right, so that's just a tiny bit of his report. Steve Friend is our guest, and he was an FBI whistleblower. And so, Steve, what do you know about what's going on with this?
Well, there's a civil war going on. I mean, it's a cold civil war, thankfully, at this point within the FBI. Hasn't gone kinetic yet. But there's definitely a New York mafia, for lack of a better term, of the old guard, people who are sympathizers with the Christopher Wray, the Paula Bate, who is the deputy director, who are actually just stepping to the current director, Cash Patel. They're going to be resistant in any way they can. They're going to try to create static in between the director and the attorney general, Pam Bondi and Cash Patel, who are actually good friends. And they're going to try to put make a stand here. Look, I mean, you got James Dennehy, who put out an email to his entire division in New York, where he basically talked about using a entrenching tool as a Marine to dig a foxhole because he was facing battle. Meanwhile, you know, if you look at his military background, he was never anywhere where he'd have to dig a foxhole, so there could be some stolen valor issues there. But that's somebody who's not really making a secret about the fact that he intends to resist. And that's very much in keeping with what we've seen from senior executives in the FBI before Donald Trump's second term. I mean, you had Jeffrey Beltre down in Miami, who actually has the Mar-a-Lago within his area of responsibility, took the helm there. But before he did, he removed all of his anti-Trump rhetoric from social media. So, I mean, I don't think we're expecting to see a lot of progress on that second assassination attempt there. There are a lot of political actors in positions of leadership or management, is probably more appropriate, of the FBI. And they want to put up as many roadblocks as they possibly can to resist as long as possible, because their faith is in that viper coiling around guys like Cash Patel and then Dan Bongino when he comes in as a deputy director, and that bureaucracy to bog them down and distract them so that they can just continue going about the business of the Bureau as they see fit.
You know, since we've kind of established, I would say fact, that the FBI has not been fighting crime. And since we've established that their new mission is something very different, and that is actually like fighting crime, what would we lose if we fired the whole lot of them? I'm speaking of the Southern District of New York. If you fired all of those people, would anybody miss them? If all they're doing is this kind of thing, why not just fire them? We could build up the Southern District, keep the clerics or whatever, anybody to let the office continue, but maybe we don't need them. Why would
You're
that be impossible?
My love language, Sandy. This is what I've been talking about for 2.5 years. Because you look at, and it's not that radical if you know about how the FBI actually does operate. Because you know, it is a large organization, but it's spread out pretty wide across a very large country. So outside of the big cities, You have small resident agencies which have maybe a handful of agents, and they don't have the personnel and the manpower to actually be effective. So what the FBI does to augment its manpower and to build up its relationships with local departments and agencies is they will take personnel from a sheriff's office or police department, experienced detectives, and they will deputize them. They'll make them task force officers, so they have state arrest authority in conjunction with their now newfound federal arrest authority. And these are normally the guys that are the most experienced people in the office. So I don't see a reason why we couldn't, if we're going to talk about paradigm shifting and then thinking about new ideas outside the box. I mean, why not, if you don't want to get rid of everybody and fire the lot, take their guns away. Take away their arrest powers and then force them to work with local sheriffs who will then have the right of refusal to say, look, you know, you brought this case to me and you're telling my guys to go forward and use their new federal arrest powers to go arrest Sandy Rios because she's an anti-government, anti-authority, violent extremist. But that ain't going to play here in Peoria. So we're not going to affect that arrest. And that could be a way to localize, to small R Republicanize the way we do federal law enforcement.
Well, that's an interesting idea. I think I still am of the cut the head off the snake camp because, you know, these guys are poison. If they're doing what you're describing, they're poison, and they will never sort out. They'll never like, oh, I see. Oh, well, we'll do it this way. It's never going to happen. And they have some really bad snakes, excuse me, from my perspective, heading up all of that. I want to go back to James Comey because Jesse Waters, in that earlier clip we played, we know that James Comey sent two female agents seduce and spy on the 2016 Trump campaign. And I don't know if it was also his presidency. Okay, that's an important timeline difference. So James Comey did that to spy on the new duly elected president of the United States. He also did the following. I want to play another clip. This is an interview that Jay, I know you're familiar with it. This is in regard to Lieutenant General Flynn, who was President Trump's national security advisor for 30 seconds. He was just setting up in the White House when he was visited by two or three FBI. And so James Comey then, after the fact, after he was fired, was on, I believe it was MSNBC, and it was a huge audience, actually, some public event. And this is what he said. Clip 8.
Take us back in time. And who was Mike Flynn, and how did you catch him lying to the FBI?
He was, I probably can talk about this more because he's pled guilty now, right, and the case is closing. He was the national security advisor to the president. He was the designee is the national security advisor to the president, probably starting in December. And he came to our attention in the early part of January when there were statements made by the vice president in public about interactions that Flynn, as the national security advisor designee, had with the Russians. And we knew those representations were very different than what the facts were. And given that we already had a case open to understand whether any Americans were working with the Russians as part of their effort to undermine our democracy, trying to figure out what was going on there was very important to us.
What did you think when you found out that the National Security Advisor designee was lying about conversations with the Russian ambassador?
Why is he lying?
Do you know the answer?
I still don't know the answer to that. So, again, I have a limited vantage point, but it was clear that he was lying, that he lied to two FBI agents on the 24th of January in the Situation Room in a conference room, and it was clear that he was lying. But the why was really interesting to us, and I didn't get that I wouldn't tell you that answer if I found it, but I didn't get it before I left, was fired in May.
You look at this White House now, and it's hard to imagine two FBI agents ending up in the sit room. How did that happen?
I sent them.
All right, so I'll make one observation before I turn it over to Steve. He destroyed Lieutenant General Flynn's career and life, but it's funny. He's on the stage talking about it. Okay, so, Steve, your thoughts on that performance on stage by James Comey?
Oh, there's a lot to get to from James Comey. So one of the gives in there that most people are looking over is the fact that he says, well, we already had a counterintelligence investigation open. Oh, you mean the illegal one that you had open there, former director Comey, because you took the Steele dossier from Hillary Clinton's campaign and then leaked it to the media to then backfill and use that to lie to the FISC and obtain illegal FISA wiretaps from the Trump campaign. But another element of that story were sending the agents because of his hubris. He thought, certainly they're not well put together here, and they're not going to talk in any other administration. They'll never talk to an FBI agent, but these rubes, these MAGA rubes, will fall for our trick here. Well, one of his top lieutenants, James Comey's top people, was Bill Priestep. And Bill Priestep wrote down in the case file, our goal is to get him to lie so we can charge him with the crime. That's Mike Flynn. So again, we're back to, we have our man, and we're going to find a crime. We're going to use a process crime to go about going after and targeting this individual. James Comey was a subversive throughout his entire tenure as a director. There was this entire thing. There was the Crossfire Hurricane. There was this honey trap where they got these two female agents to infiltrate Trump's campaign to try to dig up dirt off the books. There was no actual official case that was opened up because the director didn't want a record of it because they wanted to just dig up crime. And then when one of the agents was actually photographed by media, they lied to the media and said that she actually was a confidential human source who would have her life at risk if her identity or her photo was put out. So they spiked the story and moved the two female agents. One was promoted, the other one was moved to the CIA. And again, this is the director of the FBI trying to directly impact a presidential election, the stuff of the Cheka and the KGB. James Comey, we're talking about accountability. True accountability for James Comey will result with him in an orange jumpsuit at the end of an L-shaped hallway in solitary confinement for the rest of his life.
Well, you just answered the question I hadn't asked you yet, but that's the answer. I this is what I think too. This has to be illegal. How can it be? It's I would say it qualifies as the T word, treason. Undermining the president, your boss, he is your ultimate, he's the commander in chief, and you're setting him up and you're destroying lives. He was, and laughing about it in public. So that brings me to Chris Wray. Chris Wray makes the hair on my neck stand up. He's smoother than Comey. He doesn't make jokes like that. At least we don't hear him. He doesn't know much, you know. When he testifies in Congress, he's just not sure. He can't speak about anything, really. So do you think that there is any law that you might suspect, or a statute, or a constitutional principle that Christopher Wray has personally broken that could bring him to justice in some way?
Well, I mean, I can think of a couple. One being the fact that he lied to Congress multiple times about several issues. So said no agents were reassigned from child pornography investigations to work on January 6th. That happened to me. He said no agents conducted surveillance at school board meetings. That happened to me. He also misused the FBI jet. He was really, really hell-bent on using it as often as possible. It's a misappropriation of assets to fly home every single weekend at a cost of about $30,000 to $40,000 for the American taxpayer. He paid about $200 price of a Southwest ticket for it. But you know, let's go to the biggest one, the fact that under Christopher Wray's directorship, the FBI had the Hunter Biden laptop in its possession.
Yeah.
And then directed agents to go and tell social media that that was Russian disinformation. Again, impacting yet another presidential election because he felt that that was his duty to do. And they also used the Hunter Biden laptop to prosecute Hunter Biden, who's been pardoned now. But for them to refute that they didn't have it, they didn't know it was authentic, they didn't know that it contained any sort of allegations or evidence of illegal activity, they had it in their possession. So yet again, two for two on presidential elections. Christopher Wray at the helm there. You can't tell me that he did not have awareness of this. And again, we're back to the whistleblower. I mean, we had a whistleblower come forward on James Comey. I'd be hopeful that, you know, we have someone come forward and corroborate what Christopher Wray's direct knowledge was in that entire thing. And then maybe we could actually see accountability for all of these bad actors.
As an agent, Chris Wray was the director when you were an agent, right, Steve?
Yes, I came in. Actually, James Comey gave me my credentials, and then Christopher Wray was the director who was in charge when I was suspended.
Before you ever knew, you're a new agent, and you're, you know, I'm sure doing what you're doing with great fervor, the things that you were doing, and you just assumed, I'm guessing, like good people do, that the FBI was doing really good things and that your director was somebody to be respected. Was there something, what was the first thing that made you think that Chris Wray might not be, you know, all that he's supposed to be?
When I've heard Christopher Wray talk publicly, it, you know, I'm a big believer in having to have leadership and an actual someone at the helm who's willing to do the Truman and the buck stops with me and not evade any sort of accountability, even if it shouldn't be on you. When you take that role, you're going to have to absorb that hit for your people. You praise in public, admonish in private. And Christopher Wray has always publicly said things like, well, I have oversight of the FBI. And, you know, I just didn't have access to that. And his unwillingness when he was testifying or even giving public interviews to take personal accountability is a major red flag for me with lack of leadership.
Yes, I would say so. I mean, but he is more slippery. He's really a slimy character from my perspective. That's reminds me of something I just heard that I shouldn't go into. It was a black girl describing what happened with the Ukrainian President Zelensky and President Trump, and it said she's very street but very smart, and she keeps calling him greasy. She said he was greasy, and it was really funny. So that's what reminds me of Chris Wray right here. All right, so Steve, when you resigned, I'm supposing that you felt that you took an oath as an agent and an oath to the Constitution. So the question is, just help people to understand how you had orders from your directors, yet you had this oath. Explain to us how that works, why your orders from an FBI director were not superseded by the should have been superseded by the Constitution. Explain that to people.
Absolutely. So, you know, as an FBI agent, you swear an oath to protect the Constitution, all of the Constitution, and you also get training on not just bringing forward a whistleblower disclosure, and you have to bring it to the right parties, and it has to be a reasonable concern about waste, fraud, abuse, risk to the public safety, and then you have to balance that with lawful and constitutional and ethical directives that you would get from supervisor. So in my particular case, I had two primary concerns. One was a due process concern. The other one was a safety concern. So for a January 6th investigation going on in my office, I was very clear to me that what the FBI was doing was manipulating its practices, departing from the way that it managed cases and creating this fake illusion of domestic terrorism. And in unique to that, to the case that I was involved with, I said, look, we are departing from our rules. And the rules say if we depart, it doesn't mean that, you know, the whole thing has to go away. We just have to acknowledge that we had a departure. And then that's part of due process. We hand that over. And, you know, if you use the wrong cover evidence tape, you got to tell the defense you did that. And then that creates a vulnerability if you go to trial, because the defense attorney can say, well, you messed up on the wrong color evidence tape. Did you do something else? And that's always a concern. So I want my cases to always be buttoned up. And we are not turning this over. And that is a problem for me. Secondly, and more importantly, the individual that we were going to have to arrest, there was a arrest warrant for him, and he had been interviewed. He confessed to his activities on January 6th, and he said, I will cooperate with you, whatever you need me to do. And then we sat for 18 months and took no action on the case, and then the decision came down to go arrest him, and my executive leadership in the Jacksonville field office said, we're going to send a SWAT team to his house at 6 o'clock in the morning. And being a person who had done SWAT, being a person who had arrested over 150 criminals in his career, I said, that's extremely dangerous. You're a hammer in search of a nail. Technically, I'm supposed to be running this case. I'm like one of the case managers of it. I've not been consulted, and you were just going over my head and saying that we're going to go do this. And to me, it was an unnecessary risk to that individual's safety, to our personnel's safety. I mean, it's just reminded me of a potential Ruby Ridge type of scenario. So I vocalized those concerns and said, look, I'm not opposed to arrest. It's a lawful arrest warrant, but you have to do it in a safer way than that. I'm not comfortable. Is there another way that I can be used that day and in another capacity? And my leadership told me that I had to stay home. That I had to make myself absent without leave. And then they subsequently said that I refused to participate. but I actually followed a directive to stay home that day. And that was really the beginning of my trials and tribulations. So that was in August of 2022, and I was suspended September, so the next month. But, looking back through the way that the investigation went through, where the FBI, to circumvent whistleblower protection laws, basically just suspended my security clearance, and they said that I might lack loyalty to the country, and use that to put me in unpaid indefinite suspension. And then that process takes as long as they want to bleed you white financially, because you're technically an employee. They won't let you get any sort of outside employment, and they leave you in a purgatory. And eventually it just culminates with, I was advised by my attorneys to resign so that I could get outside employment, because if I accepted any sort of outside employment while still being technically a suspended FBI employee, they were concerned that the FBI would come after me and charge me with a crime.
Well, I don't doubt that. Because I covered the J6ers so thoroughly this last several years, and it's exactly what they did to them. They've criminalized them, and they've turned them into criminals, and they've set them up. It is so disgusting. So, Steve, just one last question for you. Who else is this coming from except Chris Wray? I realize that Merrick Garland gave them an order from the Justice Department, but the finer details of how you treat your employees, that has to come from the top, doesn't it? Mistreat your employees is what I should have said.
There is a collection of people who were involved in this. You talk about the entourage who followed James Comey around, James Comey whose book was A Higher Loyalty, gag. But he basically cultivated a personality of being a person of the highest possible integrity. And anybody who was within his sphere sort of saw it that way as well. And they were actually called the College of Cardinals, colloquially, within the FBI. So there were a lot of acolytes who were in the utmost levels of leadership, top of the pyramid. So you had Jennifer Moore, who was the Executive Assistant Director of Human Resources. She was subpoenaed by the Weaponization Committee to testify twice, and she reviewed the transcripts. She lied multiple times and actually resigned to go and take a position at GE Aerospace as a chief security officer, so she's doing really well for herself. And then she also brought along my special agent in charge, Sherry Onks, who was integral in removing me and also now works for General Electric. You had my two assistant special agents in charge, Colt Markovsky, Sean Ryan, both promoted, both now currently in Washington, D.C. One is a unit chief, and the other one is a special agent in charge of the Washington field office, just rewarded as good and faithful servants for the evil organization that they currently work for. So it's hardly at the feet of Christopher Wray, who I think I share your sentiment, is slippery enough to always have plausible deniability. I mean, I have it on good authority that he's talked about me and other whistleblowers by name in meetings where they were talking about media reports about us and what we were bringing forward publicly. But he is hardly the mastermind who is petting the cat like a James Bond villain. There are a lot of other people that propped up the agency that to them it was institution over constitution, and I had committed the cardinal sin in the FBI, and that was embarrassing the Bureau.
Well, I think the thing that comes to my mind for you, Steve, is like that psalmist who cries out, "Why do the wicked prosper? Why do the wicked prosper?" And when you're in your circumstances right now, and you can't see the end of the story, it probably has occurred to you. But you also know, because I know you're a Christian, that God does not desert the faithful. And, there's more to this life than financial success, and there is judgment. There will be judgment. So I'm sorry, speaking in spiritual terms, but I just have to, because otherwise we couldn't survive this, I don't think, if we did not trust God. But Steve Friend is the author of True Blue, My Journey from Beat Cop to Suspended FBI Whistleblower. And I recommend that book. I think that you could listen to him. He knows so much, and you'll learn even more than we talked about here. Steve, one last word from you before I say goodbye.
Well, thank you very much for having me today, first of all. And look, as long as we're going to go into the biblical sphere, I referenced it before. My group of friends, suspended FBI agents, there's a few of us who are public. There's several more who are not. We call ourselves the Suspendables because we sort of, as a joke, said we're kind of like the Expendables, but we all got suspended from duty. But Isaiah 6:8 is our verse. Whom shall I send? Here I am. send me. It's not somebody who's jumping out of their seat like the people who want to become managers in the FBI. It's just a willingness to recognize the hill that you're on, and you have to fight this battle, and you're available for tasking, whatever the consequences are. We were in a position that we recognize that, and we've leaned on each other, and it's been difficult. But at the same time, when my time is done, I'm gonna look back and know that I did the right thing, the right time, in the right way, for the right reasons, and that gives me some comfort. So thank you very much again for having me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Kind of like the J6ers, the same thing happened with them. They found a real bond and brotherhood, and many of them found a real deep faith through the ordeal that they went to. Well, all right, Steve, thank you so much for your time, so much of your time today. We really do appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing what's going to happen next for you, because I really do. You're too young for this to be the end. And so I look forward to something wonderful coming your way. And then we want to just, we'll rejoice in that for you. So thank you for joining me. All right, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
As abortion continues to rise, preborn is expanding their life-affirming care in the darkest corners of our nation to help more hurting women and save more babies. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $15,000 will place a machine in a needy women's center, saving countless lives for years to come. To donate, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Take us back in time. And who was Mike Flynn, and how did you catch him lying to the FBI?
He was... I probably can talk about this more because he's pled guilty now,
right,
and the case is closing. He was the national security advisor to the president. He was the designee as the national security advisor to the president, probably starting in December. And he came to our attention in the early part of January when there were statements made by the vice president in public about interactions that Flynn, as the national security advisor designee, had had with the Russians. And we knew those representations were very different than what the facts were. And given that we already had a case open to understand whether any Americans were working with the Russians as part of their effort to undermine our democracy, trying to figure out what was going on there was very important to us.
What did you think when you found out that the national security advisor designee was lying about conversations with the Russian ambassador?
Why is he lying?
Was Do you the know question. The answer?
I still don't know the answer to that. So, again, I have a limited vantage point, but it was clear that he was lying, that he lied to two FBI agents on the 24th of January in the Situation Room in a conference room, and it was clear that he was lying. But the why was really interesting to us, and I didn't get that I wouldn't tell you that answer if I found it, but I didn't get it before I left, was fired in May.
You look at this White House now, and it's hard to imagine two FBI agents ending up in the sit room. How did that happen?
I sent them.
Yeah, it's really funny. That's former Director James Comey, again, talking about Lieutenant General Flynn. We discussed this in part one a little bit with Steve Friend, the FBI whistleblower. But I want to repeat, because this is part two, that Comey set him up. And to say to be taking a victory lap, that he sent two FBI agents in there to set Lieutenant General Flynn up. And I explained yesterday in the prior discussion that there was a difference in a transcript. It was not a lie. It was a variation from a transcript that they had made from a conversation they had with him overseas right before President Trump was inaugurated in 2017. And it was nothing important. And also, let me add, he sounds like there's this nefarious thing going on with Flynn and the Russians. Flynn was the national security advisor. He was talking to ambassadors and representatives of countries all over the world. That was his job. And when they say that he admitted that he lied, they've tried to unwind that a million times. I'm not even sure where it stands. But that was a nightmare thing for Lieutenant General Flynn, an honorable man who didn't do what they said. They twisted the whole thing. And Comey thinks that's funny. Which brings me to my husband, my former FBI agent, retired FBI agent husband, Bruce, who's with us. Bruce, we got into that whole thing about Comey being actually criminally charged with something. Would you agree with Steve that there is a criminal act in there?
Oh, I think definitely Director Comey has to be pursued. Really, he is the one that jump-started so much of this with the Russiagate thing. Think about that, Sandy. The one thing that the left has made up over the years that has really stuck is this alleged collusion between the Russians and the Donald Trump campaign.
Yes.
Now, on its face, if you think about it, it's ridiculous. Trump was a hardliner back when this was happening against Russia. Now, people will say now, oh, no, now he's turned on toward their side against Ukraine. That's a whole can of worms that we don't have time for now. But he is not turning towards the Russians. He's just the adult in the room and saying, you know what, we have to bring this war to an end, and Ukraine, you're going to have to give a little bit. But to go back to what we were talking about, though, you know, you have to remember who General Michael Flynn was. This isn't some guy that comes in off the street to become Trump's security advisor. General Flynn was the head of the Director of National Intelligence, the DNI. The DNI is the head intelligence agency in the whole United States community of intelligence agencies. You know, there's like 19, however many there are today, there are many. The DNI is the capstone. And you don't become the head of the DNI by being somebody who wants to overthrow the country. So, I mean, the whole premise that, you know, these FBI agents went in and got this out of General Flynn, that he was, you know, this bad guy.
He was colluding with the Russians.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
I think it's exactly what you said. And you know, the language that Comey used when talking about this, I thought was interesting. When he kept saying, I don't know what he lied about, but I know he lied. I know he lied.
Yeah.
And you ever deal with someone like, it could be a friend, a spouse, whomever, you're having an argument with them, and they accuse you of lying about something. And you say, well, what did I lie about? And they go, well, you know you lied. And you go, well, what did I lie about? You know, they won't tell you because they don't really know.
They want it to be true.
And in this case, Comey wanted this to be true.
Yeah. Well, he knew it wasn't because he was part of the scheme to make it up. You know, wasn't he in the Oval Office right after the inauguration? Well, that was Susan Rice and Obama, Comey, and I'm not sure else. And they made this whole thing up. I'm sure they thought about it before that day, but they had a plan to set up Donald Trump.
You know, that's really, if you think about it, that's one of the biggest reasons why the Democrats are afraid of Donald Trump being president now, because we know for a fact that there was a meeting involving Obama, Susan Rice, several people, and that they set this thing in motion with this Steele dossier. It was completely made up. It was financed by the Democratic Party. And I know a lot of people say, well, that's 10 years ago or whatever. We're sick of hearing about it. Listen, this is as important now as it was then.
That was treason.
Yes.
And this is treason.
Yes.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of this obfuscation that's gone on over the years is to protect, in my mind, it's to protect President Obama.
Yes,
because
I think so, too.
He's always been the untouchable. Joe Biden, not so much, but President Obama, anytime something got near him, it has to go away. And I think this is something that if we follow it out, you're going to see a connection to Barack Obama.
Yeah, I do, too. Bruce, the other thing that we touched on, of course, was the whole Epstein file thing. We played a Jesse Waters clip, and he was talking about that the New York office, the Southern District of New York FBI office, had thousands and thousands of pages, computers, had everything on the Epstein thing. But he had another, a part B to that. That, in fact, do you want to comment on that first part yet? First, the office, the Southern District office. Steve told us a lot. Is there something you'd like to add to that?
As I said earlier, there was always a reputation of the FBI New York office as they do their own thing. There was a saying, there's the FBI and then there's the New York office. And the other thing that if you look at an interesting connection is James Comey's daughter, Maureen, was a prosecutor at the United States Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York.
I think she's still
and
there.
They work hand in hand with the FBI on prosecutions. In fact, she's handled many of the prosecutions of FBI arrested people. I can't state this for a fact, but do you think that maybe James Comey is worried that somebody who he's either a friend with or was a colleague with might be on that Epstein list, and that the FBI there in New York, which was tremendously influenced by James Comey. James Comey's a New Yorker. The people that congregated, who I would call his flunkies, Comey's flunkies, in other words, his subordinates, were called the College of Cardinals. And listen, there is a lot of allegiance there, and then there's a lot of hatred for Donald Trump. So you put those two things together, and I think you understand why the New York office is holding back these materials. And I have to tell you, if I was Attorney General Bondi, I would have called the head of the New York office of the FBI and said, you bring those materials that you've held back on this Epstein list to my office personally on Monday, and you better bring them all or you're not going to have a job. And if you don't show up, you're not going to have a job. And you and I are going to sit in my office, and we're going to go through these documents, and we're going to figure out what's in here, because America deserves to know what's in here.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be naive. I know that there are people's careers and reputations and everything about them at stake here if they're on this list, but that's the way it is.
Well, she came up close to doing that. You know, she demanded by 8 o'clock Monday morning, and they didn't do it.
Well, that's what I mean.
So you know what I think the solution is, Bruce? I've got an idea. How about they send Dan Bongino, that New Yorker, into that office to fire them all? That's my fantasy. What do you think?
Well, I would love that. I'm a little disappointed that Dan is still 2 weeks away from joining the FBI. I think this is a big tactical mistake. He is needed now. I understand that he has business interests to tie up before he leaves his radio show. But if you're going to take the job, we need you here now.
Yeah. Well, there's another part to the Epstein scandal. And just a reminder, because I'd forgotten about this, Bruce. It's not just the clients who went to the island, but there's a lot of other things. Like, how did he die? What happened at that prison? And so here, Jesse Waters addresses that in this clip. This is 10B.
The Justice Department also gave Epstein a sweetheart non-prosecution deal 17 years ago. Where are those files? The Bureau of Prisons. Where are those files? Do you remember where Epstein killed himself? I asked Bill Barr about that, why everything seemed to go wrong that night.
When I first heard all the information and all the coincidences here, I was suspicious.
What were the coincidences? I mean, those were a lot of coincidences.
Well, one of the cameras was out.
Right.
He was supposed to have a cellmate. Cellmate left. They didn't replace the cellmate. And the guards who were supposed to check him every half hour didn't check him.
My EMT source said he was on the scene immediately to pull Epstein's body out to the morgue. And when he got to the cell, he saw seven people there touching Epstein's body and moving stuff around.
Wow. Well, here's the thing, Bruce. Even though you may not have sympathy for Epstein because of how vile he was, this is happening in one of our prisons. And we've been talking about the way the prisons have treated, our prison system has treated the J6ers. Think about this. If the government can't possibly, that's the inference here, if the FBI maybe even is implicated in this and getting rid of this guy because of all this information on this list, that's got to be addressed. Where's that investigation?
Well, that's exactly right, Sandy. And to go to what Jesse Waters was talking about, let's start with where are these files? Where are all the things that have been seized from Epstein? Where's the forensic analysis of it? I haven't heard anything. I've just heard, you know, that Jeffrey Epstein was in jail. He committed suicide, and now it's over, basically. And that's ridiculous. There's all kinds of files and evidence, and that's why it's so hard to believe that this was all just a coincidence. I would like a statistician to put together the odds of what Jesse talked about, that the guards weren't checking, the camera was out, the cellmate wasn't replaced. I think also there were sheets in the cell that he was not supposed to have sheets because he was on suicide watch.
Well, an autopsy report, didn't they mess with that too, or
yeah,
it disappeared?
I think there were basically two conclusions, two differing conclusions, I believe, on the autopsy. So, I mean, what are the odds that would all just be kosher? It wasn't manipulated.
And whether the FBI was involved or not, they're involved now because they're refusing to investigate it and they're hiding the information.
Right.
And Bruce, there's another one. Before we say goodbye, because yet another one. How about Thomas Crooks, who tried to kill President Trump? His information has been scrubbed. We have. Same thing with his autopsy. Didn't they cremate him right away?
Yes.
So the FBI, whose job is it to investigate something like that? Please tell me, honey.
Well, the coroner leads the investigation as far as like cause of death and how they're going to handle the body. But I find it incredibly suspicious that the FBI okayed releasing the body to the family within just a few days after this happened. Especially when we have these conflicting stories from the Butler County Police versus the Secret Service as to who actually even shot Crooks, who shot the first shot, who killed him. I don't know that that's ever really been definitively determined, and that matters a bunch because, you know, there's a lot of thought that even if the Secret Service didn't affirmatively let this happen to Donald Trump, this assassination attempt, they certainly let it happen by omission. In other words, they just kept reducing the amount of protection around him till someone finally took a shot. So it is just mind-boggling that someone, this was only 6 months ago, 7 months ago that this happened, and it's just gone.
Gone quiet.
People are still speculating every day about the Kennedy assassination. That gets more investigation and more looks than a guy who 6 or 7 months ago shot President Trump.
Bruce, though, but let me clarify one more time. Let me ask you. So the Secret Service, we know a lot about that. We know that they had to step down. They've had a big shakeup. They're looking for a new Secret Service agents. They're actually advertising on the Super Bowl, for heaven's sake. But when it comes down to an investigation like that, a real serious investigation, after the coroner does his part, isn't it the FBI when it's a president?
It is. It's called an assault on a federal officer, AFO, and the FBI is the lead agency on that.
So the buck stops there.
Secret Service is involved, but they're involved more as an advisory, you know, about procedures and things about how they were protecting the president. But the actual investigation as to who pulled the trigger, was he financed by anyone? Was he radicalized by someone? Did anyone help him? What about these explosives that were found in Crooks's car? I mean, all those things, that is an FBI jurisdiction. Yeah.
And so they the buck stops with them.
Right.
Maybe do you have one more thing?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I think is really interesting is when Steve talked about that the FBI currently is giving agents a choice as to whether or not they will participate in these raids with ICE to round up illegal immigrants. Because, and that if you say, yeah, I will participate, that fellow agents are calling them Nazis. Can you imagine? Now, think about this. I bring it back to the January 6th thing, because what's going to happen if we have a true vetting out of January 6th and how people were arrested and how they were treated, you're going to have, there's going to be a showing that there was way, way more force used against these January 6ers in addition to the people that were arrested for abortion protests than was necessary. And what you're going to get is people that were involved in these raids. Think about the guys that went into Mar-a-Lago and were going through Melania Trump's wardrobe in her lingerie. Are they going to assert this defense that, well, you know, I was just doing as I was told and I didn't have a choice? But yet on the ICE raids, we've got proof that they are being told you have a choice. So it's one way or the other.
Oh, that's a really good point, honey.
You know, it's yeah. I don't want to hear guys saying, well, you know, if they're going to get fired for participating in these, let's say the Mar-a-Lago raid, saying, well, I didn't really have a choice. Yeah, you did, because they're giving choices now. And actually, Steve Friend made a choice when he was put in that situation. So, I don't want to hear this double standard in regards to people that participated. From the looks of those guys, and look, this is my own agency, this brings me no joy saying it, but when you look at those videotapes of so many of those arrests of the January 6ers, those FBI agents were enjoying it. They were not there because they were being forced to be there.
I think that's true, Bruce. Sadly, I think it's really true. Well, honey, thank you for your expertise and for your service again to the country, and for joining me to discuss this thing, this discussion we had with Steve. I want to thank Timothy Plan because they allow these discussions. They make it possible for us to have these discussions, and they teach us how to put our money where our values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.